Welcome to FinTech Fun. FinTech Fun is a podcast where Australian fintechs come to share their stories.
Hi, it's Chris Titley here. As part of the FinTech Fun podcast series, we've got Michael Bridgman and Danny Tyrrell from Dataco. Guys, thanks so much for being on this podcast series.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Chris.
Not a problem. Danny, we'll start with you. That's Dataco. What is it and how did it begin, mate?
Yeah, good question. So Dataco is essentially a group of data professionals who lived and breathed all of the challenges of data collaboration. And essentially what we've done is we've built the solution that we've always wished for to meet our own immediate needs, but really we've gone and made that accessible to anyone. So the Dataco collaboration platform is an area where organizations can securely match and connect their customer data. And then perform things like reporting or joint analytics on that joint data for a variety of use cases, from co-marketing opportunities through to customer breach notifications is a very topical one.
Sure is.
But also things into things like M&A analysis and the likes.
And Michael, there's so much to unpack there in terms of what the company does, but a couple of buzzwords that were thrown in there is secure, as well as, like, you know, people actually wanting to share their data. I would say that previously, data's pretty secure, pretty tight in terms of companies wanting to hold on to it. And this is sort of a new realm, a new way of being able to collaborate.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's an interesting space. So we know businesses today are really challenged by a number of kind of things around increasing consumer expectations with respect to personalization and the products and services they offer. So data collaboration really can unlock huge value in that space by helping organizations understand more about their customers and present them with relevant products and services. But at the same time that organizations are really trying to improve products and services, they're also challenged increasingly by evolving data regulation and privacy regulation, and even just the expectations of their consumers to keep their data secure. So our platform really enables them to do that. We leverage a lot of the latest and greatest privacy enhancing technologies, which really just means that you don't actually have to share any information with your partner in the clear. No analysts are looking at data that's not protected or always kind of hidden, but you can still derive all the right sort of insights to create value for customers.
And in terms of a 101 example from a business that collects a lot of data, what type of data is really good data for you to collaborate on? And then again, the process of them sort of signing up and going, actually, we want to sort of test our data with another co-partner or partner on something. Can you just explain, like, a bit of a 101 on how it might work?
Yeah, absolutely. So all of the activities that happen on our platform really start with our privacy-preserving customer matching. And what that allows organizations to do is essentially use the data, which is normally personally identifiable information. So things that describe different customers, this could be their name, this could be their email, this could be their phone number. But all of this information is incredibly sensitive. So what our platform allows organizations to do is to transform that data into a state that it's no longer personally identifiable information, and then do a statistical match on that data to understand who the common customers are. So all of the processes that we've put in place means that there's the right controls, so you're not exposing this PII, not exposing yourself to things like the data breaches like we've seen come up too often in the last couple of weeks, but also let you then explore what the possible value is between two organizations. Once you kind of pass that point, the type of data you use is really depending on the organization that you're in. So maybe it's things to do with product holdings, maybe it's things to do with category spend, or some things like fraud indicators. So the type of use cases are really broad depending on the type of industry that you're in. But the important thing to note is it's all done in a way which isn't exposing what this underlying data is and has all those protections to make sure that you're always complying with your consumer privacy and your expectations of your customers.
And Michael, when a company signs up and there's obviously ample data points to be matched or whatnot. Is there data scientists that do that from your end? Is it from their end? How does it work? And I would imagine that the more data that you get, the richer data sets and with a bit of potential AI or whatnot, that actually the outcomes become faster and more efficient.
Yeah, absolutely. So Dataco itself is not a services provider. So we are the infrastructure to enable the safe and secure collaboration between two parties. So we'll see that some of the large organizations will have teams of analysts and data scientists who are fully capable and experts in A, the data that they hold, but then also the right type of models that are going to create value for their consumers. But we also are working with a number of specialist partners who can provide analytics for, you know, niche domains like loyalty or marketing optimization and these types of things. So it's really a kind of a hybrid model depending on what the customer needs. But absolutely, again, on the platform, once you've gone through that initial customer match, that's really the start of the process. We enable a number of cool things on the platform. We can generate synthetic data assets, so you can kind of do some quite advanced modeling. We leverage a technology called secure multi-party computation. So again, we can build some very sophisticated personalization engines, or you can do some more simple things that actually create a heap of value, which is just some like aggregate reporting. So you can actually just measure the effectiveness and the value that you're creating with your existing partnerships is one example.
Excellent. Sorry, a little bit of feedback here. It's a bit of a windy day. I'm doing the podcast outside. It's about 30 degrees here in Brisbane. So there's a little bit of wind that's more authentic in the podcast than a professional studio. And that's the way I like it. But moving on to like the consumer side of things. So let's say I shop at a retailer and I shop with a particular bank and I shop with an energy provider and they're all sharing data and work out that I'm a customer of all three and maybe do a promotion for all three on something, like do I get a little bit freaked out because I've been sort of identified that I'm a customer of all things, or is there some sort of terms and conditions that I've ticked that allow me to be open with that?
Yeah, it's a great question, Chris, and something which is becoming more and more topical. And really the heart of what you're talking through is about customer consent. And really, we know that the expectations of consumers are around these personalized experiences, are being frictionless with just the expectations they've got from what happens in the digital world today. But really, they're becoming more and more aware about their consent. And really, what our platform allows organizations to do is, A, securely explore what the opportunity is, what the value is, without exposing any of that customer data, but then actually go back and get the right levels of consents with their customers and actually send it through to the platform. And we have a capability which allows consent enforcement at the point of activation. So only customers who have actually given their consent to be involved in data sharing actually get to be included. So the way we've really thought about the product is not meant to be a take your data, just say you can share it for whatever reasons. We're really trying to set up organizations for the future of consent and the future of data sharing in general.
And Michael, the different types of data that businesses collect and the way they collect that data in terms of using your platform, is it quite easy sort of to plug and play, or is there a little bit of hand-holding to actually upload the data or whatever you do in terms of being the central point?
No, it's very simple, Chris. So one of the things we've really been conscious of is, a couple of parts. It's really trying to make that what can be quite a complex solution very simple. So there are kind of other kind of players in this space that do require some quite heavy uplift to, you know, install SaaS on secure infrastructure and go through quite lengthy DD processes. They also charge quite a lot. Part of our model is that, you know, you can be up and running in minutes on our platform. You can actually run all the concealing of the PI data sort of on within your location. But then once that's all done, you're on the platform and you're kind of up and running and understanding those initial data points around overlapping customer bases very, very quickly. And this can all be done by data scientists running through Jupyter Notebooks in their native tools, but it can also be done by, you know, digital marketers just using our web-based UI.
And Danny, the feedback that you've got thus far in terms of the launch and can you give a bit of an example, like in terms of how old you are in terms of the product and some of the feedback that you're getting from some of the customers to and the functionality of the platform?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're actually quite new in terms of our public face. So it was only about the middle of this year, which we actually turned on our public-facing company, but we've been at this for a couple of years now, making sure we've got all the right solution in place. And all the conversations we're having with organizations is very similar. Everyone completely understands the challenges and the need for this type of solution. And really what we thought was a solution that fit the requirements for a bank. What we're talking to a number of organizations are saying, no, this isn't just the bank. This is the telcos, this is the airlines, this is the energy companies. Everyone's having the same view on the importance of privacy and security for their data, and they know the need for this solution. I think the other things that we're seeing coming out of the recent weeks is actually, even though these data breaches are happening, they're not necessarily making people scared of data collaboration. It's just reinforcing the need to say, don't share your PII data, limit the data which is actually being exposed. And that's really at the heart of what our solution is really trying to achieve.
Yeah, I guess probably from a public point of view, when you do read about some headlines of companies that where your data is exposed, you're actually not too sure where or how it has been exposed to, and the potential ramifications. There must be, you know, as you mentioned, that in terms of the sharing, you're like, okay, you know, getting into the wrong hands must be like the highest priority for you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, just to kind of reinstate the whole kind of mechanics of the platform really just ensures that you're not shipping that personally identifiable information out of your control. So we are absolutely focused on that.
And the background of the company in itself and why, how this problem was identified, and then again behind the scenes on how to start building the platform. Can you describe that before we get into some sort of personal fun stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. So our origin story is actually aligned with an organization called 1835i, which is the external venture capital and innovation partner for ANZ Bank. So really, we were working very closely in collaboration with the bank around how do you actually perform data collaboration in a secure way. They've had some starts at that in the past and really knew the need to approach data collaboration moving into this world where actually, the emergence of fintechs and open data really mean that you need to be smart with how you use your data, but also the importance of trust with the customers. So this initiative is what it was when we first started a few years ago. It was really focused around understanding the space, understanding what to do. And we were really more just nearly a technology platform solution, trying to understand how we fit the gap with what was in market. But what we found was bits and pieces of really good technology and partial solutions, but nothing that really met what we needed end to end. So we made that decision to actually build this solution to do the workflow and the end to end processes you need to do for data partnerships, take the best and greatest technology and assets that we could find, but make this into an actual usable, easy solution, and then ultimately make it accessible for everyone.
I'd imagine, or one final question on the business itself, I'd imagine the ability for smaller businesses and larger businesses to collaborate. That sounds like a very loud truck going past. We might have to edit this out, but if we don't, that's okay. But smaller businesses and larger businesses coming together is something which potentially may not have existed in the past, and this platform might be an opportunity for them to actually do this and partner in a very fast and efficient way.
Absolutely, Chris. We've actually got a few examples of that happening on the platform today, where we have sort of Australian scale-up stage startups working with some of the largest enterprises in their respective sectors. So whether that's, you know, an energy retailer, whether that's a kind of a loyalty platform working with a bank, there's a number of examples where that can happen. And you're exactly right. Having worked in and around kind of the financial services innovation space for a number of years, that was always a challenge that we face into, where you have a young company who's got a great customer value proposition and ideally they'd like to plug in and work in partnership with one of the big banks, but ultimately it's just so hard to overcome the different tech stacks, the legals, whatever it is. And so we're really, really excited about the fact that we may be able to unlock some of those opportunities in the future.
And Danny, when we're not talking de-identifiable data, breaches, privacy, platforms, you name it, in terms of your current role and getting big businesses, small businesses together, what floats your boat, mate? Have you got an outside hobby that keeps you interested outside of what is Data Co?
Chris, I used to have a lot of hobbies. I was very active, played a lot of sport, but I've actually got a one-year-old daughter. So between starting a new business and raising a one-year-old, my hobby time has decreased significantly, similar to my sleep. But I'd say the one thing that I do focus on when I get the chance is my wife's Mexican, so I've been learning Spanish for the last couple of years. So I try to speak Spanish to my daughter as much as possible. But really, with a new business and a daughter, there's not a lot of time left, mate.
No, not at all. Are you so you speak Spanish yourself?
Yeah, I do. I'm getting there in terms of my understanding, my proficiency. We speak Spanish at home as much as possible, but yeah, I'd love to go and immerse myself for a longer period of time at some point.
Can you give us an example, like saying thanks, Chris, for having us on the podcast in Spanish?
I don't know if I can go to thanks for having us on. I was like, gracias, Chris. But that's probably as
that's pretty
as I'm
well.
Go.
Yeah, you did that pretty well. It sounded authentic, anyway.
It was the accent, which you got to try to sound authentic. Right?
That's right. Okay, so one more question for you: Spanish or Mexican food?
Mexican, man. We are diehard Mexican food fans. We were going to start a Mexican food Instagram account actually at one point. We thought maybe it'd get us some cheaper deals at some of the local Mexican joints, but we're not as good on the socials as we should be.
Well, hopefully when we come around for dinner, then that'll make up for it with the food, mate. So excellent. Michael, what about yourself, mate? What do you get up to in the downtime, if you have any downtime?
Yeah, well, funnily enough, like Danny, we do compare notes a lot. I've also got a one-year-old just a couple of months. Well, he's just over one, a few months older than Danny, and a daughter who's nearly four. But when I can get out of the house before the office, I do like to partake in Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Right, that's a first. I can tell you what, that is definitely a first in our podcast.
There you go. I'm definitely a beginner, a relative beginner in the space. It hurts a lot, but it's a heap of fun, and it's a good way to kind of clear the head before you head into the office in the morning.
Right, Brazilian jiu-jitsu. It's a tongue twister in its own right. But what is the process? What do you do?
What is the process? So it's like, I guess it became quite famous in the early days of the UFC. It's pretty much like anything that happens on the ground. So, you know, choking people, trying to break their arms and legs, right, whatever else it might entail.
Right. It doesn't involve teammates or workmates, does it?
It's one-on-one. So, no, there's no kind of tag team in Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
So I reckon Michael would take on Danny. You reckon that's no good? Someone will come out of the sword.
I'm more of a lover, not a fighter.
Right,
Chris.
There
it's
you
just,
go.
It's just a bit of fun.
And the four-year-old.
Christmas party could get interesting.
That's right. Christmas party would be interesting. Right, so the four-year-old, how's your knowledge on TV shows for kids, mate? Going okay?
I'm pretty good, yeah.
Peppa Pig?
Bluey, we've got Peppa Pig, Ben and Holly, Bluey.
Ben and Holly, that's right, yep.
PJ Masks.
All right, Bluey. Bluey's obviously a very proud Brisbaneite here. We're home of, there's many tourism spots that people actually go to and say, that was in the Bluey episode. There's actually a Bluey house here, which caused a bit of chaos in the local suburbs. And the Chinese restaurant, by the way, which is one of my favourite episodes, The Takeaway, is now closed, which is unfortunate. I think it's closed. Anyway, what's your favourite episode? Have you got a favourite episode of Bluey?
I like the one. It's a recent one. It's where the neighbour has got like the lawn sale and she's selling the mobility scooter. And I think it's Bingo or one of the friends turns into like this nasty grandma and they have a standoff on the lawn with the little pug and they end up fleecing her for $1,000 for this mobility scooter. Yeah,
I enjoyed the State of Origin one recently. That was rehashed a few times around the Origin where poor old mum didn't go so well. But then when Australia played and everyone came together again, it's always finishes on a feel-good note. And speaking of finishing on a feel-good note, thank you everyone for coming on this podcast, Danny and Michael on DataCo. I really appreciate you giving the listeners an understanding of what it is, how DataCo came into inception, and also the progress that you made in a very, very early sense, only about 6 months old or less than. But really look forward to seeing the progress of everything and how it's all working and the updates, and look forward to catching up.
Thanks so much, Chris. Thanks for having us on.
For more information on Sub11, jump onto our LinkedIn or email me, Chris@sub11.com.au. Thanks for listening.